The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's that time here in Spain where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks, and we'll be joined today a little later by Chris McCann. How are we today, Bill?
Yeah, very good indeed. Thank you, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well. Well, inflation has been back in the financial news over recent weeks, so let's talk about that this week to see if it's anything to worry about, both from an investment and a personal point of view, particularly for people who are retired. But before we get round to that, Bill, what else has caught your eye in the financial news or other news this last week?
Well, picking on local news, perhaps, I was quite surprised to hear that Spain's traffic authority, the Director General of Traffic, is going to clamp down on short distractions on the road by fining drivers who have their phones close to them, even if they're not technically using them. The DGT is pushing its plans through to toughen the country's road laws just days after the speed limit for most urban roads in Spain was reduced to 50 to 30 kilometres an hour. It's quite a dramatic change when I remember the daring days of Spanish driving. But the DGT now seeking approval from Spanish Parliament to increase the criteria that constitutes a punishable offence for using electronic devices at the wheel. Clearly not a bad step forward, but rather dramatic that if you have the phone on the passenger seat of your car within close proximity to you, the way it's going now, it looks as if that may become an offence for which there will be points and a substantial fine.
They use helicopters, do you know?
Yeah, well, look, the old days of whizzing around Spain and checks El Portador are history now, Howard, and we're moving Spain very rapidly into the 21st century with these kind of offences being now labelled as finable and points off your licence. I was also distressed this week to see that the African enclave of Ceuta awoke to a rather dramatic humanitarian crisis with 8,000 migrants crossing over from Morocco and spent the night sleeping where they could find shelter. Quite how that's going to pan out, I don't know. Of course, minors are, by statute, allowed to stay on Spanish soil. But we shall see, because this looks like perhaps the beginning of a long-term border crossing issue. The next item was rather confusing. Since the 17th of May, if you're a UK national, you can travel anywhere on the amber list. But you have to quarantine when you get home for 10 days. You can test and release after 5 days, but a senior politician in the UK, George Eustace, on Tuesday said that people could go to amber list countries to visit friends, but the Prime Minister later said that people should only visit amber territories if they absolutely have to for some pressing family or urgent business reasons. It's all got a bit confusing. I was quite surprised when I looked at the expense that a trip to an amber country might cost you. You've a test before you go generally. You have a 2-day test, an 8-day test, and you can test and release yourself after 5 days. If a family of four adults travel to an amber country with the costs of those tests, you're talking about 2,000 UK pounds sterling extra costs on your holiday. Some people haven't paid that much for their flights and their holiday combined. So there is a deterrent there. But Spain, of course, refusing to allow people in until the end of May, indeed turned people back from Mallorca. 50% of a flight was turned back from Mallorca, Palma, Mallorca, during the week. One interesting item, Howard, climate change is always in the news. I was amazed to read that a huge iceberg the largest, has broken off from an ice shelf in Antarctica, and it's actually now floating its way through the Weddell Sea. It's called A76 for reasons I don't know. It's roughly the shape of Manhattan, but it's more than 70 times bigger than Manhattan. It was picked up on satellite images, and it is currently, as I say, the largest iceberg in the world. It's about 170 kilometres long and about 25 kilometres wide. In space, it actually is slightly larger than the Spanish island of Mallorca. That is some iceberg.
Yeah. Well, moving on to our inflation subject, why has the financial news been talking a lot about it recently?
I think economists and market forecasters are increasingly worried that central banks, particularly in the United States and probably in the UK, will increase interest rates, or they may just rein back on the quantitative easing that is going on if prices continue to overheat. During last week, Wall Street fell sharply, recovered slightly later in the week, and Europe closed also lower when US data showed that inflation had jumped to 4.2% since last year. Now, Chris is going to talk to you about the reality of where we are in a moment, but just to bring that into perspective, 4.2%, if it were to remain at that level, would mean that over a 10-year period, you would see a 35% loss of your spending power. Whatever you do, do not ignore inflation. I don't expect inflation to remain at 4.2%, and I know that Chris is going to talk you through a timescale which we believe is probably more realistic. But it's not certain that we won't suffer from higher inflation. I mean, UK inflation expectations are now at their highest level since 2008. That is in itself slightly alarming. And stock markets become very jittery if interest rates rise. Investors often start to move from stocks and shares to less risky assets. And, you know, calmer heads, and as I say, Chris will go through this with you in a moment, are convinced that inflation is temporary and that over the period of the next couple of years, while we might see modest moves from the Federal Reserve Bank in America, who do tend to influence international rates, we might see modest increases in interest to try to dampen inflation. It is remarkable that the rate of 4.2% sort of reflects a combination of what has been very hefty fiscal support from government. There are supply bottlenecks during the pandemic. Inventories were run down to the ground. And there is also a huge increase in fuel costs, which is causing additional delivery costs. And there are, these supply chain bottlenecks. So I think that we will continue to see attention being paid in the press to the risks of inflation. But as I say, I'm not entirely convinced that we're going to continue with rates as high as 4.2%. It's rather the case that both the chairman of the Fed Reserve Bank and the governor of the Bank of England have said they do expect inflation to tick up, but they suspect it may be temporary, caused by the impact of the pandemic and the fact that everything was pretty much locked down.
How and why does inflation affect stock and bond prices? And what is the link with interest rates?
Yeah, well, starting at the back end of that question, Howard, interest rates are generally increased or decreased in line with the rates declared by the local central bank, but generally speaking, the rates paid by commercial institutions who have to often borrow money to meet their liabilities are below the rate that is dictated by the central bank. In economics, inflation is a quantitative measure, one of sort of quantity over quality, if I can put it like that, of the speed, if you like, at which the average cost for a standardised basket of goods increases over a specific period. Inflation sort of measures the spending power of a currency, and most often it will appear as a percentage number. Now, there is some political gerrymandering that goes on. There's no question about that, that this basket of goods is often varied, and I suspect sometimes to create an image of a lower level of inflation. One of the key issues, I think, for retired expatriates living in, listening into our programme, is that for the retired population, inflation is almost always much higher than the quoted rate. Medical services, private medical insurance, lots of issues that confront retired expatriates tend to increase in price much greater than the consumer price index. And in a sense, those climbing prices are bad news for consumers because, as I mentioned earlier, if the inflation rate were to continue at this horrific level of 4.2%, although 10 or 15 years ago we would have considered that normal, it just takes an ever-increasing amount of money to purchase the same basket of goods and services year after year. Your purchasing power is gradually eroded until, in the end, if you don't do something to counter the effects of inflation, your quality of your living, your spending power will fall. As I say, there are many different factors that have contributed to rising prices. When the overall demand for goods builds up, supply prices tend to rise. It's just a question of supply and demand. There are increases in cost of production due to everything from the growth, which was announced this week, in labour rises to the cost of raw commodities. And they have all increased significantly in price. I don't think that an increase in inflation is going to be excessive, but I do suspect that we are heading into an area now where inflation is almost unavoidable.
So do investors need to be concerned? What should they do when asset prices are hit by inflation fears?
Yeah, I think that it is essential that you consider how you position your diversified portfolio to take advantage of the fact that very often during an inflationary period, stock market prices rise in certain sectors and in other sectors they may not. So it's important to consider how you're positioned if inflation is going to threaten the value of your portfolio. I mean, the primary benefit of investing during inflation is actually to preserve your portfolio's purchasing or buying power. I mean, the second reason is that obviously all of us want to ensure that the nest egg which we have built up continues to grow. Now, this might encourage you to consider to diversify, but within the range of services that Blevins Franks offers to its clients, and I'm sure Chris will remind you of this, it is time in the markets that makes the money, not timing. Those that go for timing often end up with the tips of their fingers, if not the whole of their fingers, burned. The fact is, in most cases, Blevins Franks clients will be positioned to ride the storm of a reasonably modest increase in inflation. I mean, spreading the risk across a variety of holdings is, if you like, a time-proven method of portfolio construction, which Blevins Franks follows with the advice from the Russell Group, who are a company observing, researching and determining the best of investment managers across the various asset classes and global markets. And that portfolio construction is in a sense already a defence against inflation. There are some positives to inflation. As I say, it's important to position yourself so that you're preserving the worth of your portfolio. You may wish to consider if you are at the moment on cash deposit, because anyone who's on cash deposit, even with very low rates of inflation, is going to see their spending power eroded. You need to be invested in what are called real assets, stocks, involved in the businesses of the world, in the various markets, in the right sectors. And this is a time, I think, if inflation is going to raise its ugly head, for you to perhaps call one of the Blevins Franks offices and speak to them about how you might position your portfolio to maintain the buying power of the income or the capital growth, if that's what you're looking for, of your portfolio. Sometimes people act rather hurriedly, in a sense, to increase risk, which I think is often unnecessary. And sometimes people do divert from their long-term goals, and that is absolutely unnecessary. If you have the same goals, objectives, aspirations that you started with, then ride the storm because, as I say, it's time that makes money, not timing. It is sometimes the case that you can overweight your portfolio in some asset classes to take advantage of the growth that they're likely to make. I spoke to Chris earlier, and he described the remarks from the US President Reagan regarding inflation, and I'm sure he'll remind our listeners of that in a moment. So I think it's a time to be cautious. It's a time to be considering how you are invested, and a time really to sit down and talk to someone who understands what you have to do to protect yourself against the loss of your spending power, because inflation may come back at higher rates than is being forecast. And if it does, you need to be protected from that by correctly diversifying and investing in the right class of assets.
Many thanks, Bill. Let's look at personal issues now with Chris McCann. Chris, do people like you and I, and especially retired people, need to be concerned by inflation, especially when it's been so low for years?
Hi, Howard. Well, firstly, I think it's fair to say that in general, many people don't realise how damaging inflation can be to one's wealth. I also think this has been increasingly so over more recent times, which may have something to do with the fact that for many years, when we hear or read about the latest inflation numbers, they're always low. In effect, they've lulled many people into a false sense of security. For savers, it doesn't matter how low inflation is. It's always the case that if your savings are generating a return that is below inflation, the real value of your savings are falling. For example, let's assume that you have money in a bank account and that pays you interest of 1%. And I'm being optimistic here because most bank accounts now generate zero interest. A year later, you'll have 1% more money. But what if inflation is more than 1%? Although you've got more money, it can purchase less than the amount you started with. In other words, the prices of goods and services that you purchase on a daily basis have gone up in price by more than your savings have. Hence, you are poorer than when you were a year ago. In the current environment, with absolute levels of inflation and interest rates at current historical levels, it's understandable for people to think it's not something to worry about. However, it doesn't matter what the absolute numbers are. Even at low levels, it's a relative problem. If inflation exceeds interest rates, savers are poorer. The problem becomes clearer when you look at the effects of inflation over longer periods. Continuing with my previous example, if your bank account pays you interest of 1% per annum, but inflation is 2% per annum, over a 10-year period, you'll have 10% more money, but the goods and services you purchase will have increased in price by 20%. Hence, in real terms, you will be poorer by 10%. The longer-term effects of inflation are sometimes why you see it referred to as the silent killer. As one ex-US president of the US, Ronald Reagan, once said, inflation is as violent as a mugger, as frightening as an armed robber, and as deadly as a hitman. So in answer to your original question, people should always be concerned about inflation.
Do you think bank interest rates will start to increase soon to help savers keep pace with inflation?
As regards how we see inflation impacting markets going forward, I refer to the views of one of our investment partners, Russell Investments. Despite agreeing that economies are poised to rebound sharply as restrictions are gradually lifted, they disagree that inflation pressures and interest rates are likely to increase significantly over the next 12 months. They believe it will take until at least the middle of 2022 for the US economy to recover, the lost output from the coronavirus-induced lockdowns, and even longer in other economies. Amid this backdrop, they believe that broad-based inflation pressures are unlikely to emerge until 2023, with late 2023 and early 2024 a more likely timing for the first US Federal Reserve rate hikes. This view was supported by the minutes of the US Federal Reserve meeting held earlier this week, in which they stated that the US economy remains a long way from the central bank's goal of full employment and price stability, suggesting that the current stance of record low interest rates and billions in monthly bond purchases will remain in place for at least the next 2 years. So in summary, and to answer your question, it looks unlikely that interest rates will start to increase for at least a couple of years.
So what can we do to protect our savings for the long term?
The answer is a simple one. If you want the returns on your savings to outstrip inflation, you need to invest in assets that have historically generated returns that have been in excess of inflation. Given that bank accounts, government bonds, and to a lesser extent corporate bonds can be hard hit by inflation, your investment portfolio needs to comprise some exposure to equities and real assets. Moreover, it is time in the market and not timing that will ensure that you achieve your longer-term investment goals. Jumping for the exits at any sign of bad news, such as a potential pickup in inflation, will likely lead to poorer returns over the longer term.
What about people who worry about taking on too much investment risk? How do you help your clients earn a decent amount of investment growth within a risk level that they're comfortable with?
We follow a simple discipline process. The first step is to agree what your objectives are. The second step is to agree upon a plan to achieve your objectives. And the last piece of the puzzle is to decide upon a suitable, well-diversified portfolio to achieve your plan and ultimately your objectives. As part of this process, from a risk point of view, we take each client through an academically designed suitability process, which helps us to determine their attitude to risk. With this information, we can ensure that they have the potential to generate the returns they require to achieve their objectives, but also that they do not take on too much risk. Having put the plan in place, it's then essential to have good quality investment managers to make investment decisions on a day-to-day basis. And it's also essential to have a trusted advisor to ensure that you're patient and you stick to the plan. If any listeners would like to learn more about our approach, they simply need to contact us.
And the website is the best port of call.
Yeah, listeners can visit our website, blevinsfranks.com, where they will be able to get contact numbers for all of our local partners. They will also be able to submit an inquiry form. And once they do that, somebody will be in touch shortly after to make an appointment or to discuss what they require.
Well, thank you very much. We'll chat again in a couple of weeks, I think.
Thank you, Howard. Much appreciated.